Yeah, I watch old TV shows.
Yeah.
And it was the first Kojak. You remember Kojak?
Telly Savalas.
Telly Savalas.
With and, the lollipop.
Yeah, he had the lollipop going. So for the pilot, it was Crocker's first day. You know, Kevin Dobson played Crocker.
Sure, Crocker.
So he was just out of police academy. Green. They kept saying how green he was. Kojak had been around a long time. He knew everything. So he's, you know, has this green kid, and he doesn't know if he wants to be working with him. So the what was happening was prostitutes were being murdered.
Oh, you know? My.
He goes, go down and try to get some information from the prostitute's mother. So a little while later, Crocker comes back. I talked to her mother. She wasn't a prostitute at all. She was a good, good girl. Yeah. So Kojak's seen it all, right? So he takes this lollipop, he goes, yep, she was a good girl. Mama's apple pie, the 4th of July. She was a hooker! Crocker was too green to see it, you know? So that's a funny one that anyone can do at home.
Sounds too blue to cry.
We got really setting a cowboy mood there.
Yeah,
I think this is the first official Western episode of Baby Oil and Blow. There's horses and everything. I've been inundated in the Western recently. It's one of the things I've been doing.
Thought you were watching samurai films.
Yeah, there was one night I watched ninja films in specific.
That's
I was
some kind of Western thing?
Far from it, dude. But I'm finding a lot of weird old B-Westerns, thanks to, you know, the internet.
Ah, yeah. Good place to find stuff.
Yeah, you can do anything these days on the internet.
You looking for something? Try the internet.
Walter Hill, also a man who watched a lot of old Westerns in his days. His whole generation of directors, I feel like, from this era.
Yeah.
Him and Carpenter, and they were all wanted to make Westerns, but, you know, nobody wanted to see Westerns anymore.
Late 70s and early 80s.
So they just kept trying to, like, figure out a way to make secret hidden Westerns.
Bubby, nobody wants to see the Western anymore.
Except somehow Walter Hill got one or two through. Where he got
Bubula.
A real one with horses and dusty towns and all that shit.
That would want to see, because the Keach brothers financed it.
Is that what's going on? Stacy Keach is like, I'm going to take all my Cheech and Chong money.
I'm Stacy Keach.
I'm gonna throw it down, and we're gonna have ourselves a Wagons West adventure.
Yeehaw!
On all of our friends,
Baby Oil and Blow, and Action Extravaganza.
Couldn't fit a horse.
What
into the studio? So we just got whiskey. That's what we.
We settled on whiskey.
We wore spurs and we got whiskey. Yeah.
Jingle jangle. Well, I'm a long tall Texan. Mm-hmm. I ride a big white horse. He comes from Texas, rides a big white
That's
horse.
That's a fun one.
I am your host, Matt O. With me,
Last
as always,
that was true.
He finna be the other host.
Uh-huh.
He is the... Who you want to be?
I don't know.
I was going to keep it Western related, but I think we did Western last week, or is that 2 weeks ago when I did the Deadwood?
No memories anymore.
You can be
producing memories.
60 pounds of feces
that was found in
the colon of John Wayne, who is my colon.
Is it an aging thing?
When he died.
Is it a substance abuse thing? I'm not entirely sure.
Suppose.
Why I can't make new memories anymore.
Oh, I chalk it up to how much we drink these days.
I could possibly be true.
My memory's really bad, and there's like direct correlation.
But then I also hear old people don't ever remember anything.
They were
like,
getting
I'm
old.
Getting pretty old now.
We should do Sudoku puzzles and take those vitamins for memory.
Oh, the ones that like Joe Rogan's always hawking?
Yeah.
The Joe Rogan snake oil pills? I'll do whatever works.
Joe Rogan, you probably have troubles.
Did you say that I was
with...
the crap in John Wayne's colon? Is that what we decided on?
Yeah, I'm John Wayne's colon, and then you're the 60 pounds of crap
okay.
that was found inside of it when he died.
Hoy hoy.
He was found with a lot of shit in his...
Doesn't everybody have a lot of shit inside of them,
know.
Though?
Why do you think they called him the Duke?
Yeah. That's a funny nickname.
Yeah.
I wonder why they do call him the Duke.
I tell you what, pal, we were living the Wild West over the weekend, huh?
Oh, yeah?
Saloon to saloon.
Wow.
Drinking whiskeys.
You were. You're the one with a broken toe and a...
Getting in bar fights.
Police record.
Yeah.
I was just, you know, sitting back like a
Police
gentleman watching
there.
It all go down.
Yeah. Yep.
So, there was a bar fight.
Yep.
Again.
Again, yeah.
Your 8 foot tall friend.
Uh-huh.
Knocked somebody out real bad. I didn't really see how it started.
I don't think anybody did.
But after everybody dragged him out of there, I was still just sitting there while everybody got that guy up and shook him awake. And he didn't seem to know why it happened either.
He
was
down,
pretty confused.
Huh? He got knocked
out. So we got him up and dusted him off and got a beer in front of him. And that was about it.
Wow, you did the right thing.
Yeah.
You got a beer in front of him. We really westerned it up. Yeah.
So the police did not get called. We smoothed it all over pretty quickly.
Yeah. I got a big guy out of there pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good thing.
Yeah.
Everybody was looking around confused. Nobody had time to call the authorities or pull out a gun. You never know in this day and age. We're going back to Wild West times. There's guns everywhere in this fucking country.
So now I got a bum wheel.
Yeah, how's that
purple
treating
toe.
You? Is it still very purple?
It's still very purple.
Oh, man.
The toe doesn't hurt as bad today, but I've got a baseball size knot in my calf from limping on my leg all week.
And any memory of how this all went down?
No.
Yeah, like,
I got,
like I said,
all as I can,
these memories
all as I can
harder and
remember
harder.
Is I got home Friday night and was like, oh, man, my toe hurts really bad. Mm-hmm.
Toe pick.
And decided to buddy tape my toes together.
Okay.
Because I was like, that'll help.
Is that like that stuff that athletes tape all over themselves?
No, you just...
What's
I just
buddy tape?
No, I just took medical tape and taped the one toe to the other.
Mm.
That's what you do when you get like a break a finger.
And they're buddies?
You buddy tape
they're buddies
it.
Now?
That's what that's called.
That's
yeah.
cute. I've never heard it called that.
First, I tried to just use a Band-Aid to keep them together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, ah, fuck, I got medical tape. And I did that. And then I was like, good enough, time to go pass out for four hours.
It's usually 4th of July when you give yourself your summer injuries. We're a couple of weeks ahead of schedule here.
I was talking to Maria.
Wondering if you're going to be able to pull something off on 4th of July.
In all fairness.
Hurting yourself-wise.
In all fairness, this one wasn't as shameful as my usual injuries.
That's probably true.
Usually they're self-afflicted from really dumb decisions I make. This was like, I saw two people fighting and was like, I'm going to do something about this.
The best part is when the fight popped off, like some dude was doing karaoke, some nu metal song.
Yeah.
And then like he kept trying to get in the middle of it with like the microphone on.
Yeah.
And then like the bartender was like, cut it down, shut it down. And, like she shut all
she
the music
it?
Down. Yeah. And then like the guy kept trying to like still like
nu metal
be
sing?
In charge of things. Like he's clearly he kept talking about this is his bar. What's going on in his bar? And the bartender like wasn't having it. She kept being like, fucking Derek or whatever his name is, like, quit getting in people's faces. Derek, sit down and shut up. Derek, quit being an asshole, Derek. He's clearly just that guy who's like at this bar every fucking day thinks like everybody loves him and like hits his scene, but like everybody in there fucking loathes him and just barely tolerates his presence. His douche vibes were just radiating off him, and then finally he just had to sit down shamed by the bartender who was like, you're not in charge of anything, quit trying to grab people's arms and figure out what's going on, sit down and shut up, you don't work here, you're a loser,
you're a fucking loser.
Because every bar has got that one maybe a small handful of people who just want to pretend like they work there for some reason. It's like, this is my life, this bar here. I've got bars that I hang out in all the time. I'm a real bar fly. I don't give a fuck if those places burn to the ground or whatever, though. I'm not going to, like, grab a mop.
Nope. We'll find another
one. Let's mop some of this shit up. No.
We've been conned into doing enough free work at the watering hole.
That's probably true.
And not like a, please let us, but more of like a, hey, you two alcoholics.
Real doormat.
We'll give you free drinks if you go unclog that girl's shitter.
To be fair, it's more us usually just doing gross shit that nobody else would be willing to.
Yeah.
Usually involving like bloody tampons.
Yeah, the women's shitter at the zombie club is the bane of our existence.
What are you going to do? It's the Wild West out there. People are trying to flush their tampons. 8 foot tall men are knocking other men out during nu metal karaoke.
Yeah. We've set up bar fights. We talked about the outhouse. Yeah, we set it all up. I think we're ready to get into this.
Okay, let's get into this week's rundown, which is brought to us by Cinepocalypse, the Midwest's largest and most prestigious genre film festival. I was there yesterday and got super blackout drunk.
Nice.
Barely remember much of the last movie I saw, which was the movie I wanted to see the most.
Which
the
one
first
was that?
20 minutes of it. Fangoria's new joint, Satanic Panic.
Okay.
The first 20 minutes seemed a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then just the memories, they go away.
You want to make a memory?
Somehow I got home. Probably it was pretty dangerous. But I had a great time. Saw a handful of movies. It was sharing drinks with friends and chatting about things.
Yeah.
And just mixing it up out there. Oh, I don't know. I was getting bombed at the pizza place next door.
Coal fire?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to do that some more tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. There's more going on. Tomorrow's Joe Bob Briggs lecture, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood. Probably pretty appropriate here, because this rundown is for a movie full of a bunch of fucking Missouri hillbillies.
Yep.
We're talking about 1980s, The Long Riders. This is our next Walter Hill movie. If you've been following along, we're doing a whole month of Walter Hill joints.
Mm-hmm.
Runtime of this movie, 100 minutes. You usually don't get that with these historical westerns.
No.
They usually try to go like 2 hours and 15, and I'm like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah.
Walter Hill, he knew what was up. He's our director, of course. Our budget. I saw a couple figures. $8 million seemed to be the one that was sourced the best that I saw. So I'm going $8 million. Grossed $15.7 million. So I don't know. If you go by the rule that you got to double your budget in order to make a profit in Hollywood, which is some shady shit. They almost did it.
Almost
they got real close, which for a cowboy movie in 1980, that's not so bad.
No.
Cowboy movies were not en vogue at the time.
But you know who was? En Vogue.
And the group En Vogue was literally En Vogue.
They didn't come around.
No, they probably hadn't even gotten their periods yet.
Never gonna get it, never gonna get it.
I think why this movie did well, let's get into it. The gimmick of the movie. We'll talk about our stars of the movie. It stars a bunch of different brothers.
Well, hey.
We got James and Stacy Keach in there playing Jesse James and his brother
Frank
James. We were talking about a little earlier, Stacy Keach, he was the cop in the Cheech and Chong movies. He was the star of Mike Hammer, Private Detective. You've seen him in a million things. James Keach, on the other hand, he was Stacy Keach's brother.
Yeah.
That's his biggest credit.
He's a bit of a singer.
Oh, God. David, Keith, and Robert Carradine are our next group of brothers. They're in there playing Cole, Jim, and Bob Younger. You know these guys.
A couple of good time Johnnies.
Kane from Kung Fu, Wild Bill from Deadwood, and Lewis from Revenge of the Nerds. They're all real life brothers. Can you believe it? The younger brothers, part of the James Gang. You sense the pattern forming here. This is a movie about the James Gang, a bunch of bank robbers. Dennis and Randy Quaid round out the group as Ed and Clell Miller. These guys are fucking legends. I don't need to tell you who Dennis and Randy Quaid was. Randy Quaid saved the earth when aliens tried to take it over. Give me a break.
Duh.
Also, mention Christopher and Nicholas Guest show up in a couple scenes playing Charlie and Bob Ford.
But really?
Bob Ford, the coward, infamous man.
Really, Christopher Guest is just playing Christopher Guest.
Yeah, you know him. He's the dude from Spinal Tap and all those Christopher Guest movies. His brother, Nicholas. He was Todd from Christmas Vacation. I'm going to say that's his big role. That's
Todd in Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, you know, the snobby dude who lives next door, married to Elaine from Seinfeld.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty legendary role for him.
We had
a couple Christmas Vacation alumni in here. Fucking
yeah.
Uncle whatever also in this one.
Cousin Eddie?
Cousin Eddie.
I'm Why is the carpet all wet, Todd?
I don't know, Margot.
Tagline of this movie, all the world likes an outlaw. For some damn reason, they remember him. And then there's quotes around that, and then it's tribute to Jesse James. Our tagline is just like a quote.
Okay.
Plot synopsis here. It says, the origins, exploits, and the ultimate fate of the James Gang is told in a sympathetic portrayal of the bank robbers made up of brothers who begin their legendary bank raids because of revenge. It's not a very good plot synopsis, but it was the best one out there. I mean, somebody needs to get to work out there. Start submitting better plot synopses for these Walter Hill movies to these internet databases of film detritus. Mm-hmm. That's the rundown. It gives you a little idea of what we're dealing with here.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, you're watching along with these movies and not just cheating and relying on us to tell you about these movies. So
we're
you
not
can
your,
then, like,
we're not
go
your
out there
cliff
in public,
notes, pal.
Pretend to people like you've seen them. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen that one. There's that scene where blah, blah, blah. Shit that we heard Nate and Matt say. God, you're posers.
Do your due diligence.
Don't live your life like that.
And watch these films. And, you know, because... if you're listening to this, you're probably
somebody is
some kind of.
I see the numbers out there.
Some kind of.
There are
single
people,
loser
people listening to this.
If you got time to listen,
they
to
might
this,
have commutes. They got
going time to
on.
Watch
they're not
a
necessarily
movie.
Losers. Come on.
Well, either way, you probably got time to watch a movie. I doubt there's a lady in your life, buddy.
No, no, definitely not.
Yeah,
you just got a lot of cowboy movies and loneliness going on.
Yeah, not you specifically.
Oh.
Yeah, I wasn't outing you, man.
Oh, sorry.
You're good, you're good.
Bullet points. Let's get into the bullet points. The talking points surrounding this fucking movie. There's a lot to get into.
Okay.
How you want to start it?
How
you want to go off?
Man, I don't know. I just want to talk about how everybody looked, I guess.
Okay. it's just like physically? Just or like, are we talking about costuming or anything? Or
just what they looked like, their hair and stuff.
There's a lot of different hairstyles going on in this movie. And then they change because, like, usually they'll, like, have a different mustache or whatever to, like, tell us that some time has passed or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, all these changing facial hairs and hairstyles. Yeah. It's hard to keep all these white guys apart, man.
It's fun to see.
The movie full of white guys.
It's fun to see people in, you know, Western movies because it's usually something dramatic like long hair.
Oh, sure.
Or like a big, you know.
Fanciful mustache.
Push broom mustache, or something.
Nothing better.
You get, obviously, Dennis Quaid with that mustache.
And this is like a young dirt stash Dennis Quaid. He's looking like a fucking just a punk, just a dirtbag punk in this movie.
He's great though, because like his head's as big as regular Dennis Quaid, but his body hasn't grown into it yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. Which did have some lollipop head going on here.
Stacy Keach just looks young.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like Stacy Keach.
It always just like fucking is astonishing to me how much early 80s Stacy Keach is just exactly early 2000s Powers Booth.
Yeah.
It's like, just like if Stacy Keach just didn't age for 20 years, like because he was an immortal vampire or something, he could have just done everything Powers Booth did in the 2000s.
Absolutely.
It's fucking weird.
Dave Carradine.
Oh, David Carradine.
He
is not a pretty man.
No.
And he's leaning into it in this movie. We get to see him do some romancing and stuff, and it's gross to watch.
He just looks sleazy. And then,
sleazy, sleazy mustache on him in this one.
Yeah. I said he looks a lot like John Grease in Fright Night 2.
Oh, okay, yeah. I feel
you know,
what you're
Uncle
saying.
Rico.
Yeah, I feel what you're saying, yeah.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over them mountains? Yeah. If a coach would have put me in fourth quarter, we'd have been state champions, no doubt. No doubt in my mind. You better believe things would have been different. I'd have gone pro. In a heartbeat. I'd be making millions of dollars and living in a big old mansion somewhere. You know, soaking it up in a hot tub with my soulmate. Kip, I reckon you know a lot about cyberspace. You ever come across anything like time travel?
Easy. I've already looked into it for myself.
Right on.
That's all I kept thinking when I'd see him.
Yeah, definitely. Randy Quaid kind of just looks like Randy Quaid in this. He's not really like doing anything Western, which is a shame because young Randy Quaid just looked like Randy, but like old Randy Quaid now looks like a fucking insane person.
Yeah.
He looks like a Unabomber or
something. They should have tried to make him look like that.
What you want to get is an old Randy Quaid in some sort of Western movie now. I think we're missing opportunities. I know he's fucking like a lunatic and I don't even think allowed to enter the country anymore, but you know, we could pull some strings. This is Hollywood. We need like some late career Nick Nolte shit out of him now that he's so fucking haggard and crazy.
Yeah.
Get that up on film. Take advantage of it.
Old Keith Carradine, he just looked like Keith Carradine.
Yeah, he's kind of the rock of the Carradine family. Yeah. You can always just set your watch to him.
He's probably the most attractive of them all, even though he just kind of looks like a foot.
Yeah, he's kind of got like a bit of a like Don Knotts-esque fish mouth.
Yeah.
But like still, well, I guess Dennis Quaid's clearly the most attractive in this crew. We're talking overall in the movie,
absolutely.
As of the Carradines, I'm giving it to him.
Yeah.
The big one we haven't ran down yet and how he looks is
Jimmy Keach.
Because this guy have nothing to offer?
Yeah.
This guy's just generic looking.
He's
got no charisma.
He's got that white guy, no top lip.
Yeah, that's pretty true. Thin-lipped fucker. Has there ever been a least charismatic, least compelling Jesse James on screen? I gotta say, probably not. How'd we get stuck with such a lame Jesse James for this movie? It's got to just be because they were committed so hard to the brothers gimmick.
Yeah.
There had to be a weak link in this thing. And I'm going to say it was fucking James Keach. Jesus Christ. Especially if Stacy Keach is dropping money on this shit. I can see why he got cast.
Stacy.
Trying to make my brother a thing.
Stacy comes across well.
I totally buy into him as a cowboy bank robber.
There was a couple of scenes earlier in the film where I dug a James Keach as a Jesse James. He had just kind of
which ones?
I don't know. It just
I think my brain was turning off every time he was on the screen.
His dry, dead delivery just it was very to the point.
A lot of that.
And very, you know, he was no nonsense.
Yeah, no nonsense, but I don't know. No air of authority to him that I was getting. Like, I wasn't buying that this guy is like a mythic figure that everybody talks about and like other men would follow to the ends of the earth.
And that's
and
a great point. You know, it's just his weird, dry, milquetoast delivery of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you put it up against the Carradines.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They're a charismatic group,
Carradines got personality for days, man.
But this led me to one of my big first points that I wanted to get to already, like right out the gate of this movie. All these guys are a million times more likable than any one of the warriors.
Oh, yeah, that's for damn sure.
It's like the first thing I noticed.
If we're talking about Walter Hill movies wherein crews of dudes like roll around in either the countryside or the city like doing things, it's much less of a chore. Once these guys, like the bank robbery scenes and whatnot are one thing, but when the scenes are where they're standing around, just talking, shooting the shit, delivering dialogue, being human beings, much, much less of a chore to get through in this movie. Maybe even a couple scenes here and there where I was like, this dialogue's accomplishing things.
Yeah.
It's not all for naught like it was in The Warriors, where it was mostly just dipshit douchebags talking about raping.
We're going to go rape tonight.
And also, like, this is a movie where, like we talked last week, that was a movie about gang members. They're inherently unlikable characters. This is also a movie about gang members, inherently unlikable characters. And I think this movie, much more so than The Warriors, does something with that. It's playing around with that thematically. It's showing us, like, how these people are beloved in certain circles and how they shouldn't be because they're actually kind of fucking scumbags.
Yeah.
It's kind of the heart of the movie there. Whereas The Warriors is just like, here's some scumbags. I hope you like them.
Yeah.
I don't, Walter Hill. I don't like these guys at all.
I wonder, like, would it be the case if you took it out of a Western, if you would have tried to make it like a more modern time thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's like just
get these guys on some Harley Davidsons.
Right. Is it the fact that we just romanticize the cowboy, the outlaw, that it gets romanticized so much?
It does,
you know?
Indeed. Here in America.
Yeah. We've got that ongoing love letter.
Oh, you know who we didn't talk
Wild
about
West?
How they look
Who's
in this
that?
Movie? We didn't talk about
Bobby Carradine?
No, the chick who plays Schwarzenegger's partner in Kindergarten Cop.
Yes.
We get to see her butt in this movie. She gets naked. It looks great.
Yeah, she did have a nice little pooper.
I was like, all right, get to see the chick from Kindergarten Cop's butt. You got me a great service here.
Some side boob there, too. Side boob action, and they were impressive.
She's coming out of a bath because... is she the one that's
she's a whore
romancing? Yeah, she's the one romancing David Carradine. Yeah, right? Yeah. So,
and just like in other Walter Hill movies, Dave Carradine keeps reminding us she's a whore.
Right to her face, just like maybe me and you got some things going on. He's like, no, you're always gonna be a whore.
He's like, maybe we would if you weren't such a whore.
Shelley, don't forget that old saying about firemen. Don't be such a huge whore.
Did I say baby? I meant dirty whore.
Don't fall for any old whore like your daddy did.
You have to admit, you come off a bit of a whore in this whole thing.
You're a huge whore. Oh, don't forget your huge collection of Mardi Gras beads, whore. You gold-digging whore.
But you get the idea, right? That she was a huge whore?
Walter Hill needs to maybe collaborate with Norm Macdonald in some sort of movie. I could think just these guys talking about whores. That could really be something, I feel like.
Yeah. Man, I could watch that night in and night out.
So one of the things that really struck me about
there was one more he didn't touch on.
Oh, who was
who
that?
Looked awful.
Oh, no.
Whoever Keith Carradine's love interest is.
Yeah.
That homely white woman.
Yeah.
Oh, who is she?
We got a lot of scenes. Of
what
just,
actress
like,
was
love
she?
Love triangles around there. I didn't look it up. I was not interested enough to look it up, but nothing happening there.
She was hard to look at.
But speaking of things that are hard to look at, one of the things that jumped out to me was this movie.
Yeah, go ahead, playa.
Is not all that great to look at the way you think traditionally Western should be. You think about the wide open country and the sweeping vistas and all that shit in a normal Western. We're not getting a lot of wide shots in here. This movie is all about the actors, all about the characters. You're getting a lot of close-ups, a lot of medium shots, and it just struck me how... Just with the cameras and with the look of it, this does not look like what your typical Western is, which seems strange to me for a man who grew up loving Western so much, says all of his movies are Westerns. This is his first opportunity to make a fucking Western. One of the characters in this movie at some point says, like, this ain't Texas. And like, that hit me. I was like, no, this isn't Texas. This is fucking Missouri. Missouri looks like shit. Like, why aren't we watching a fucking Western movie that's set in Texas right now so we can get out there and see the sun and see the hills? And I don't know. It's interesting. It sets it apart a little bit, I think, from the rest of the genre. But I was kind of expecting, like, you talk about the assassination of Jesse James. We're talking about a more modern thing. That movie looks fucking gorgeous. They got Roger Deakin shooting that thing. And, you're just taking pictures of that blonde girl and just putting them right in front of my face.
So she's younger. She's like a strawberry blonde.
Yeah, she's got some braces going on in that one.
Yeah.
She's even ganglier as a slightly younger version of herself.
That's in one of the four movies she made called A Wedding.
A Wedding?
Yeah, she wasn't in
that's
much.
That's a great title right
that's
there.
That's why we didn't know who she was.
Basically, like, if you just, like, were to find the most baseline, generic-looking white woman, like, that's fucking her.
If you took, what's her face from the Carrie movie, the original Carrie?
Sissy Spacek?
Yeah, and just, like, completely just...
Yeah, she's got some, like, interesting shit
down.
Going on
with
her, but, like, is kind of just, like, that, like, pie-faced white woman thing going on where it's like you barely even have facial features. I'm looking at you and it kind of feels like I'm watching like a cop show and your face is blurred, but this is real life, so your face can't be blurred.
It's not.
Why don't you have facial features?
Yeah. Although this movie didn't look the prettiest like the aforementioned films, it did have a real train, Nate.
Oh, God. Thank Christ. A
couple real trains.
We get some train robberies in this thing because we're about robbers. And after that debacle of a CG train from the Deadwood movie a couple weeks ago, real good to see some guys actually climbing around on a real train that didn't make me feel like I was watching cutscenes from a fucking video game.
Guys climbing around on a real train, that also has to do with what you did over the weekend. See what I did there?
You're making it sound dirty.
Yeah.
It was not dirty. I was at a train concert. It was what was going on.
Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
They played all the hits. Watched Jobs Troubadour live.
All the way to
it made me cry.
The new stuff.
Meet Virginia.
It's the new stuff.
I taped that whole thing with my cell phone, so I've just been watching that video over and over again. There's new Train stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And you know some of the lyrics.
They their newest song is literally just.
How do you even come across this?
Heart and
VH1
soul.
VH1 isn't a thing anymore.
I
People
hear
aren't
stuff
just
on
like
things.
Watching VH1.
I hear stuff on things, unfortunately. I pay attention more when we're out in public.
Yeah.
It's a curse. Since the return of my stay on the moon, she listens like spring and she talks like June.
Getting into these robberies, the action of this movie, the whole reason we're watching this movie is because of the fucking action.
Yeah.
This thing's a bit slow paced. It's kind of got a bit of that 70s hangover thing where there's not much narrative thrust. Like the storytelling's not great, but like there's enough action scenes sprinkled throughout to keep my interest. Mm-hmm. And generally they're fucking awesome. The action in this shit is, and anytime somebody starts shooting, like I'm happy because this is one of those fucking movies where when somebody gets shot, gigantic chunks of their body come flying out of them.
Let's
blood's gushing everywhere.
Let's hold off on that for a little bit. Let's push the story along for a minute because I want to get to that. But when it really starts happening is a little later in the film.
Yeah, it's builds. The action gets crazier and crazier every scene we get.
Some shit's going on. They're robbing banks. They're robbing trains. Dennis Quaid, they're like, bro, you're not in our gang anymore.
Yeah, starts off, he's the wild card. He's shooting people during these robberies that don't need to be shot. And they're like, the heat's coming down on us, man. You're bringing too much heat in the form of the fucking Pinkertons. They're after us.
Pinkertons come to town. They fuck around. They kill the Younger's cousin, John.
Sure.
And then they kill the James gang's handicapped 15-year-old
blow up his whole house with him inside of it.
Yeah.
These fucking Pinkertons are incompetent doofs.
So, you know, they're like, well, we're going to have to kill us some Pinkertons.
And that's where you start getting sort of the theme stuff I was talking about, where like the townsfolk can see these Pinkertons fucking shit up, killing the wrong people, and it sort of gives the James gang a sort of Robin Hood type appeal to them.
Right.
And like they got a lot of people that support them, even though they're just robbing fucking criminal scumbags.
But they still have standards. Like, they won't date whores, Nate.
Well, I mean, Carradine's fully on board with dating the whore. He just wants her to know, like, nobody's ever going to marry you.
Because you're a whore.
Yeah. You're going to remain a whore.
It's like everybody's having a real good time at this affair.
Well, I expect so. Free drinks, food and all.
How come I wouldn't
have met him? Because you're a whore.
Walter Hill, he really doesn't care for women.
I don't know. Carradine tells her, like, that's why I like you. I like it that you're a whore.
But think about it.
Maybe he's just into sluts.
We were talking about how we watched that terrible final, that terribly amazing last Walter Hill movie with Michelle Rodriguez.
The one where she's surgically altered to become a male killing machine.
No, she was already a dude.
Okay, she was already a dude, and then they make the dude into a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
because
that's
there's
all a
nothing.
Blur. That movie was fucking crazy.
She's playing some like weird, filthy, like Serbian hitman or something.
Yeah, and his revenge, like they turn him into a woman.
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver revenges him by cutting off his dick and turning him into a beautiful woman.
That's some body horse shit right there.
And he's just like, oh, this is the worst thing that could happen to me. I've been turned into a sniveling
whore.
That
is true. It is presented as the ultimate form of revenge, making somebody live their life as a woman.
So Walter Hill's got some...
He's clearly drawn to projects.
Repressed, you know...
That hate women.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not signing off on it, though. Maybe he's shining a spotlight on it, Matt. He's holding up a mirror
he's
to all of the sexism that we have in our own hearts.
That's when he got a hold of the Aliens movies. He gave us some badass space marines.
Yeah, it's fucking get rid of this strong woman running around in panties nonsense.
No.
We need some sweaty men out here fighting these aliens.
You gonna sell action figures, bro?
I'd love to sell some action figures.
No one's gonna want a Ripley doll.
Different sources of income is like, yeah,
you need some space marines.
Nobody did want a Ripley doll.
Yeah.
The 80s were weird.
Yeah.
You hear shit like that. People are just like, movie studios are just like, you know, you can't have a woman star in a movie. And people are like, that's bullshit. Blah, blah, blah. But there's some truth to it. Like, if you want, like, fucking selling action figures and shit, which you want in an action movie if you're fucking making shit in the 1980s, people ain't buying a fucking Ripley doll. If you're a chick, you're buying fucking Barbie dolls. If you're dude, you're buying Rambo dolls.
Or if you're Ted, you're conflicted about your feelings for a gem doll.
Uncomfortable truths out there about these movie studio guys aren't always wrong when they just want to put straight white people in every fucking role. It's a proven formula, other than when you get like the occasional person who will cross over and decide that they like Gem and the Holograms and cry in a Jewel Osco.
There you go. You got it.
Holding the doll in his little hands because he knows that boys aren't supposed to be playing with girl toys.
Boys don't cry.
Shout out to Teddy Bizkliz and his struggling with societal norms as a young child.
He turned out all right. He's good now.
Okay. Good to hear. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. So what happened was the heat gets too hot. And so they're like,
that's true.
Hey, man.
They start sleeping on barn floors and shit because there's just too many Pinkertons after them. It's not a great life being a criminal. Crime does not pay. People say it all the time.
And their constant struggle with morality about what they're doing. They're like, you know, innocent people that we love are getting killed now. This is getting to be too much. It's just not safe for everybody around us. We get that we're doing what we're doing. We're okay with that. But we got to break up the band for a minute. Let's all lay low.
Mm-hmm. And do some talking scenes where we're all like seen with our girlfriends and whatnot.
And new facial hair.
Who's getting married? Who's not getting married? I was going to marry you. We get a love trial or a love triangle between Dennis Quaid. After getting kicked out of the gang, he comes back and steals another one's fucking lady. So there's some tension there. And Dennis Quaid starts, you know, coming kind of a turncoat, just like, maybe I'm going to sell these guys out. You get some tension there. But overall, it's kind of just weirdly paced in 70s and the way it goes. Like, you don't really know, other than the hair changing, like when time has changed. It's not like all that clear. We're not getting like title cards with fucking dates put up or something. And I don't know. I was just getting kind of confused here and there. Just like,
Butch Cassidy,
how many years are we supposed to think have passed here? Or is it months that have passed here?
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid is a movie along the similar lines where it's like, no, we're going to try and go straight. And they do a good job.
I got Butch and Sundance, the early years, waiting for me on a DVD over here in the front room.
Oh, we'll talk about that later.
Looking forward to this one.
So, you know, that one does a good job of conveying time changing and years passing.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, this one, like you said, just is kind of like, hey, he's got a beard now.
And in general,
it's years later,
I don't like it when movies, like, especially movies that are talking about real life figures, do this shit where they're like, here's a good 20 years of their life, or God forbid, the ones that go from like birth all the way to death and they try to cram it all in. That's when you get these 2 hour and 15 minute epics. This one's not quite that. It's just a couple different points we drop in on, but I think overall this would have been better served to focus more and just been like about like one or two close together jobs that they try to pull and just like focus in on one tiny period. Even if historically it's not accurate, like, well, they kicked him out, but then it didn't come back to this until years later. I don't care about historical accuracy.
Yeah.
Change some shit to give me just a more coherent,
entertain
focused,
my
streamlined
ass,
narrative.
It.
Yeah, entertain my ass. I don't care how long it took these fucking shitheads courtship rituals before they finally settled down and
give
got
me
married
a mustache, damn it.
I'm watching a goddamn Western. I'm here for these robbery scenes. I'm here for the shootouts with the Pinkertons. There's too much character stuff in here that didn't really go anywhere for me.
No.
Like, I don't really think seeing their love lives or their home lives with their families ever informed what was happening in the action scenes and made them resonate more.
No.
It was more just the interpersonal relationships of the guys in the gangs themselves that was interesting. And you don't need all that extra shit. You could build all that stuff into how they're interacting while they rob and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Just too much. They're doing too much there. The only cool things that really happened in that time were, of course, Dave Carradine's like, well, I gotta go find my whore.
Mm-hmm.
trunk's fine. As you can see, friend, it's not small. It's a big trunk. I'll show you right here.
Well, you got a dead hooker in the trunk.
What? No, it can't be.
Yes, it was. It was a dead hooker.
It wasn't a dead hooker!
Pal, I know a dead hooker when I see one.
What's happening? Hey, folks, yeah, come on down.
Hey, here's another dead hooker in this trunk.
What?
Oh, my goodness.
What are you doing?
I've never seen so many dead hookers in all my life.
Lord knows I have.
He goes to Texas and he's like, hey, you whore. And she's like, ah, I might have settled down. You're like, you were wrong about me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, the fuck I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts getting pissed. She starts getting pissed. And then her husband shows up, who's Ajax.
Shit. James Remar.
Yeah.
Popping back up in a Walter Hill movie.
With beautiful long hair. I think that was a wig.
He looked great.
I think that was a wig.
Nice tan. Just some, some flowing weave.
He was supposed to be like Native American, I think.
Oh, is that what we were pushing for that?
He made some kind of comment about him being an Indian.
He should have put him in full headdress like the black dude from the Warriors then. I would have known. He's like, oh, this guy's clearly an Indian.
Walter Hill was going to use that, but unfortunately that dude took that costume home with him.
He's still just wearing it every day in his personal life.
I can't find it. Dang it.
I look too fucking cool.
It's around here somewhere.
In these Indian clothes. I'm not giving these back.
So they have a cool knife fight where they each bite on a piece of pantyhose.
Oh, man, this is the most strange, old-timey thing ever.
Yeah.
They have some sort of knife fight with a length of cloth in between them, and I guess, like, the rules of this knife fight to the death are that, like, you can't let it go from in between your teeth.
No.
It's kind of like one of those 1970s era pro wrestling, like dog collar matches, or like Texas bull rope matches, where it's just like we're always connected to each other. There ain't no running away.
I thought they were gonna.
This needs to come back, man.
Yeah,
if we could have done one of these in the bar this weekend, there's some beef between some dudes or whatever. Yeah. Fucking, here you go. Get the biting rope. These two dudes need to circle around each other and have some sort of old timey crazy knife fight.
It's a gentleman's way
of
doing
things.
Yeah,
that could bring some class back into these dirt fucking shitty bars we hang out in.
Yeah, this just
these
the shittiest.
Miserable, crazy people. You got to have rules, even when you're living a life of crime and scumbaggery.
Yeah, I thought they were going to do the Michael Jackson beat it, tie the wrists together.
I mean, it was very close. We're borderline. This is the only part where we're starting to get some West Side Story, the Warriors type theatrical shit going on. But it was cool because it was David Carradine involved in it.
It turns out he's awesome with knives, so he wins the fight. None of it matters because they put the band back together, and they're like, hey, we got to do a big job here. And old Randy Quaid's like, hey, we're going to steal this. Squarehead's got a big old bank up in Minnesota.
Yeah. One of my bullet points right here is the term squareheads.
Yeah.
This is a racial slur that I was never aware of. Never heard until I started watching Western shit.
Yeah.
And it just pops up all the fucking time in Westerns. What are these, like, Dutch people or something? Who are we calling squareheads?
Yeah, it stood for Northern Europeans, mostly, though, for Germans and Scandinavians.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. I like every once in a while coming across a new way to hate. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, I wasn't aware that I could marginalize these people, but now I got a nice little term to do it.
And it was in response to their physical cranial shape.
Mm-hmm.
They had square heads.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a clever thing.
No, it's certainly not clever.
Yeah. Al Swearengen.
Usually racist comments aren't all that clever, though.
Al Swearengen, he used to like to say it a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
The square head kid.
The young Sophie character.
Yeah.
That little girl really did have a square head, too. They had to put out a casting call, like, everybody bring in your 5-year-old daughters must have a square head.
Yeah. No, that one's not square enough.
But then they did that movie, and it wasn't the same girl. It was some girl whose head wasn't even square, playing grown-up Sophie in that new Deadwood movie.
Right, yeah.
Bring me back the original square-headed bitch.
Maria's got a real square head.
Yeah, she's got like no Scandinavian blood in her. How did that happen?
I don't know. I'm going to have to 23andOne her.
How did that happen?
I'm going to send it in.
There's some things
Ancestry.com.
Back in her past that people aren't fessing up to.
She could be Scandinavian or something. I'll find out.
It'd be nice if I had another racial slur I could throw at her every once in a while.
Besides the tired and true ones.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to rob the bank in Minnesota. Things are good. They're on the way. There's a nice little train scene where they're all back together.
Oh, man. just
which I really enjoyed.
So many memories.
I liked the train.
Any sort of movie about a crew of people where you can get a nice scene of them just all like riding out of the sunset or something, all in like a line. That's good stuff. That's gonna work every time you can do it.
So they get to Minnesota off of the train. Like, here we go. Should we plan this out?
Now, I had a bit of a confusion here where, I don't know, I might have stopped watching for a second or whatever. The idea to go rob these squareheads in Minnesota is Randy Quaid's idea.
Correct.
Did they address where he got this idea? Because I thought maybe, like, he was fed bad info by his brother as sort of like a turncoat thing would have made sense.
Oh, you know, I didn't really catch.
But I don't know that that happened, and if it was, it was subtle. Yeah. I think maybe that was just me projecting, like, that's how it should have happened. That seemed the way it was going, but I don't know if they ever even, like, because
we get
Dennis Quaid, like, in a jail, and, like, he's getting shook down by these Pinkertons, like, give up the fucking gang, but I don't know that anything ever really comes of it. Do we ever, like, see him again? Like,
no, he just turns loyal all of a sudden. He's like, fuck you, like, your money ain't shit. Jesse James pays more than that.
Yeah, and we do start getting many more themes of loyalty, and people's loyalty is tested here in the second half of this movie. So I guess maybe that's just what that scene was doing, was trying to set up, like, all right, everybody's going to reach a point where they have to choose, like, am I going to be loyal or am I going to be a turncoat? And that was his moment.
Well, yeah, I'm assuming he just got floated bad information somewhere along the way.
This is a disaster, this fucking robbery. It's probably the best robbery gone wrong scene in a movie this side of fucking Heat, where that fucking bank robbery goes bad.
That's wow, yeah.
They're waiting
for
them. The whole town knows they're there. They've got a bunch of traps set. They've got the fucking bank vault on a timer so it can't be opened. Basically, they just walk into like a fucking killing floor. Like,
and here,
there's people on all sides that just want to murder them.
Here is why you brought up that violence earlier, and I want to get into it now, because holy shit, it's all just practical effects.
Oh yeah,
stunt work. Like, just grown men getting dragged by horses, looking like their legs gonna get ripped off of their body.
Trampling people and then, like, the horses tripping and, like, falling over and doing barrel rolls.
Breaking through glass.
How many horses did they kill in this fucking movie? Yeah, the scene where they're trying to get away and they just fucking ride their horses through the plate glass windows of a fucking shop.
The front of a building, all the way.
And then all the way through the gigantic windows in the back, and there's just people falling off horses tripping, glass flying everywhere. None of it's fake.
Yeah.
It's all fucking really happening. It's just
broken wood everywhere.
So dangerous. Like, they had to have killed a couple horses at least. They had to have injured a ton of stuntmen.
Yeah.
Like, this is, outside of like Sam Peckinpah, this is some of the most just like violent Western shit you're ever going to see.
There's this one fucking scene, like, where it's the classic, oh, you shot the guy on top of the roof, and he's going to do that dramatic, oh, I got shot, dive off the top of the roof.
Great Western, but he goes, fucking cliche.
But he goes off the roof through the fucking wooden awning and then breaks through the wooden floor below him.
Oh, yeah, he does.
And it was just like, where was the pad? Like, I think that guy just really got hurt.
Right after the Pinkertons blow up the James house and kill the retarded brother, they come after those guys for revenge and just fucking corner them and shoot them.
Yeah.
And just like, from getting shot by bullets, these Pinkertons like fly through the air after getting hit by a bullet backwards like 15 feet, fly through plate glass windows, like blood's exploding everywhere. Huge chunks are coming out of them. Like, it's such over-the-top violence that I fucking love it. It's like those kung fu movies you'll get where, like, people are getting beheaded and just geysers of blood are spraying everywhere, and it's just over-the-top crazy, and it makes the violence fucking fun.
Yeah, what's his name? Walter Hill was quoted, quoted Godard or whatever, but he said the big thing that he wanted in this movie was for the jokes to be funny and the bullets to be real.
Yeah, there you go.
And you see it, like, in this scene, specifically.
I don't really know how many jokes there are that landed or anything like that, but I was fucking stoked about all the bullets
flying.
The
bullets
were
for sure real. There was one scene, too, that was just fucking brutal, and it's so simple, but just brutal. It was right before they go through the building with the horses. They're getting chased by some Pinkertons.
Oh, hell yeah.
And they make, like, a clever move, and they trick this one guy into essentially running into a tree branch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just this stuntman on a horse running full speed, just getting blasted across the chest by a tree branch. And it's like, oh, how did he not just break his sternum?
Getting all the sweet slow-mo shit, too, whenever the violent stuff happens here in the end, which is really nice because, like, they wait till the fucking end to start popping off the slow-mo. It's not like a Zack Snyder movie where everything happens in slow-mo all throughout the entire movie and it just becomes tedious. Like, once shit starts slowing down here, it's just to, like, show off all the crazy shit that's happening. And because we haven't got it to this point, it means something. And it just makes everything look so much fucking cooler.
And you get your main characters are getting shot up now. The ones you care about, all the Carradines get shot. Everybody gets shot except Jesse James. Jesse James is the only one that doesn't get fucking shot.
Louis Skolnick's got like bad belly wounds. Yeah. Fucking, was it Keith who gets shot through the cheek and can't even talk anymore because his just face is mangled?
In one cheek and out the other, David just takes 11 bullets throughout his body.
It is still pretty decent afterwards for having 11 bullets inside. And that's historically accurate from what I understand that, in that whole younger, I think he was Cole Younger, did have 11 bullets in him afterwards.
Like, what a badass then.
Randy Quaid full on dies. Which is cool, takes
one to the, he's the one that takes one to the gut.
He gets one last opportunity to use his last words to say something racist again. So it's like, well, that guy went out how he lived being a fucking racist.
Yeah, just the way he wanted. So the Youngers. Well, the James gang decides they have to split from the Youngers because the Youngers are too shot up.
Here's the biggest loyalty test we get in the entire fucking movie where the James brothers are just like, we're going to abandon the rest of our gang even though we're supposed to lead this gang.
Yeah.
And the Youngers are all like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, we're supposed to be a gang. You're just going to leave us here? And Jesse's like, yep, we are. And Frank's just like, well, if my brother's leaving, I got to leave. And it's just like, okay, so Dennis Quaid seemed like an asshole in the beginning, but when push came to shove, he actually was loyal. The younger brothers all pretty loyal. It's these iconic, beloved James brothers who are the real fucking scumbags who are just in it for number one and nothing else.
They care about themselves and their legacy.
And which is one of the coolest things I think that this movie does is the way it subverts expectations where the whole first half of the movie, it seems like we're building up these anti-heroes. We're showing them be oppressed by the man. We're showing their fucking innocent family members get killed. We're seeing like the townspeople love them. And you think you're building up this big rebel spirit, anti-hero, fucking damn the man, popcorn Western. But then it pulls the rug out from under you where it takes these guys that have been built up like heroes and it reveals them to be scumbags, just reveals them to be like fucking racist thieves that'll turn their back on what's supposed to be their brothers. And then you're like, oh, I was starting to like these guys and think they were cool and want to be them, and now I'm just faced with the fact that they're really assholes. It adds some complexity to this that you don't normally get for most shoot 'em ups.
A great thing you just brought up, you're saying the whole rebel spirit, and something we haven't talked about is a big point is how most of these guys fought in the Civil War.
We're deep in the Civil War hangover here.
We're for the South, and they, you know, they all fought for the South. And so at first, like you said, the whole, you know, rebel spirit and like, yeah, maybe these guys, maybe that's what's keeping them together. Like, yeah, they are all war guys together and that means something to them.
Mm-hmm.
But then as it gets explained later, once the Youngers get pinched and they're trying to press Robert Carradine for answers as to what happened, he's like, maybe you can blame the war. And he's like, well, you're too young for the war. And he's like, yeah, but, you know, my brothers were in it.
Yeah, I saw what happened to my brothers. It fucked them up.
Yeah.
The whole South got fucking raped and pillaged and robbed. Like, we lost everything.
But at the same time, he said, like, if it wasn't for the war, we might have turned into even something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knows, like, they were probably just bad dudes from the get-go.
Yeah, sure.
But the war gave them a little bit of structure.
War gives bad people opportunities to do bad things.
Military gave them structure, you know? And it was like, okay, so we got to kind of keep our shit together to an extent, but not really. And it's just layers. Just little layers like
that. You can blame these fucking Pinkertons for killing these people and their lives, but it wouldn't have happened if they weren't living these lives that brings violence to them. It's shades of gray going on here. Walter Hill giving us miserable people, giving us shades of gray, and just, you know, letting us wallow in the misery like he does.
Yeah.
This is peak Walter Hill if you're going thematics and like the shit that he's interested in.
So Youngers get pinched.
Mm-hmm.
They're locked up. But just like Dennis Quaid, they're like, fuck you, man. Like, we ain't squealing. Shit went south with the James. Mm-hmm. You know that viewing mm-hmm. audience. But even though it went south, still ain't no snitch.
Yeah, if there is anybody who comes out of this looking like sort of that they could be considered heroes in the end, it's pretty much the younger brothers. Yeah. They're the only ones that aren't completely condemned, I think, in the eyes of the film.
Yeah.
So then we get a little coda where we are shown the death of Jesse James. We get the Ford brothers who are bought off by the Pinkertons to pretend like they want to join his gang. Goes to dinner at his house. This is historical shit. Everybody knows how it plays out. Fucking shoot him in the back while he's straightening a picture. This is our last turncoat. Our last loyalty test. These fucking these brothers. They take the money. They used to think that the James gang was the coolest shit. They wanted to join. Jesse James wouldn't let them. He originally denied them. So now they feel like they've got no loyalty, and they're just mm-hmm. gonna take the fucking paycheck. And that's, I guess, was Jesse James. He came out of everything unscathed, and but eventually it was his not standing up for the people around him that did him in, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
He didn't bring these guys in. He didn't open his arms to them, and it killed him in the end.
Literally, it killed him. So Frank shows up to the Pinkertons. He's like, I'm turning myself in. Here's my gun. He's like, oh, okay, thanks. He's like, under one condition. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, what's that? He's like, you let me bury my brother.
Yeah, then he's like, we're cops and you're a criminal. Like, no, we're just going to arrest you. That's stupid. We don't do these things on conditions. Give me a break.
He turns the gun around real quick that he was handing in, and he's like, well, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, burial it is.
I don't really want to die, so we're going to do something unprecedented here. We're going to let you dictate the terms of your arrest.
So you get this final little bittersweet scene.
Yeah, great last shot. Once again, we're on a real train.
Yeah, Stacy Keach on a real train with Head Pinkerton dude. As they're just in a, it's like a just a 2-3 car train. Yeah. They're pulling Jesse James' body in it, and they're both just standing next to it, just their backs to it.
Handcuffed together
so he can't get away. Wide open door, just watching as the scenery goes by. And they go past just, you know, some villager, some
town folk,
backwoods,
some yokel.
Hillbilly, just there with his horse. And he sees the train go by, and he realizes what kind of train it is. And he sees old Frank James,
mm-hmm.
and he takes his hat off, and he holds it over his heart. And Frank just kind of looks at
him. Back to this shit about people loving outlaws. Yeah. Just like this empty fucking man on this train. He's got nothing, but The people out there are still going to salute them and treat them like they're something important.
Yep.
Even though they're just fucking scumbags.
Yeah. So here you have it. We worked our way through that one.
Yeah, we certainly did. Yeah. Let's take a break here.
Hear
a coming attraction. See what we're capping off this Walter Hill month with.
And
then we'll come back and we'll enter this film into Judgment Day.
Have you seen this boy?
We ain't partners. We ain't brothers and we ain't friends. I'm putting you down and keeping you down until Gans is locked up or dead. And if Gans gets away, you're gonna be sorry you ever met me.
I'm already sorry.
Nick Nolte is a cop. Eddie Murphy is a con.
I can help you get Gans, but you gotta get me out of here first.
You're crazy.
He pulls some strings.
See, you needed me a little more than you thought. I'm Mr. K.
He pulls some scams.
So where do you want to do it, honey? Want to hop up on the counter?
Nah, we can go in this room over here next to the bathroom.
Give me a break.
I'm dead serious.
Come on, we're on the move. Let's go.
They've got two killers to track down.
Toss me that piece, and he won't waste him.
They've got a kidnapping going down.
I want the money.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Let that Indian to snap her neck.
They've got a fortune to hunt down.
I want to know what's going on between you and Gans.
$500,000.
And it's all coming down in 48 hours.
But I gave you 48 hours to come up with something, and the clock's running.
This guy got a real itchy trigger finger, and he's a nervous cop. You better listen to him, you get your brain blown out.
I'm the calm type.
I'm looking for a good old boy by the name of Billy Dare.
Never heard of him. Heard of him now, man?
You know, you are real stupid for a cop, man. You're following this guy too close.
Yeah, well, most cops are pretty stupid, but since you landed in jail, what the hell does that make you?
What's happening, Luther? I'm sorry about the door, man. Did that hurt? It looked real painful.
You come clean and we're going again right here, right now.
Some hurry or something?
Yes, I'm in a hurry. I haven't done anything for 3 years.
Oh, you used to be a priest or something.
This ain't my night.
If you screw up, I can promise you, you're going down.
They couldn't like each other less. They couldn't need each other more.
You want to bet?
And if they can get off each other's case.
Look at you. You got a $500 suit on. You're still a lowlife.
Yeah, but I look good.
They just might solve this one.
Being a cop is a hard job, Jack.
Nick Nolte, Eddie Murphy.
We ain't brothers, we ain't partners, and we ain't friends. Now, if Dan gets away with my money, you're going to be sorry you ever met me.
I'm already sorry.
48 hours.
Y'all be cool.
Bone on the Ryu. Bam, bam, bam. Bone on the Ryu.
This is the name of a drink that we're looking forward to drinking tomorrow at our local coal-fired pizza place. Great little mezcal cocktail.
I'm going to drink 10 of them.
That's why we need to get into this Judgment Day thing. We need to wrap all this shit up. End talking about this movie so I can put this podcast together tonight. I can just spend tomorrow just all day fucking hanging out with Joe Bob Briggs and getting fucking lit up.
Man.
I did ask the people, the Cinepocalypse people on Instagram, if they were going to have Lone Star beer on hand, and they have not gotten back to me, so...
Ooh.
Guys, I know you're busy over there, but whoever's in charge of this social media has to address this fucking issue right here.
Yeah, you gotta get your shit together.
Listening to Joe Bob Briggs talk about movies, I want to have a fucking Lone Star in my hand. Give me a break.
Goddamn right. He's gonna have one. I want one, too.
So, Judgment Day. This is when we dig through all of the reviews that you, the people out there, the salt of the earth, have put on the internet. We pick a few out, some five bullets.
The wildebeests of the world.
Yeah, I looked to see if I can find a wildebeest review of this one, and I could not.
Can we click on her profile and just find out what movies she's reviewed?
I tried to do that, but then like I searched for that name on the IMDb because it's an IMDb user, and you can't search for users. I don't know. I'm going to have to go back to one of the previous ones we did and click on the name there, but that's a whole runaround. We got to get some more wildebeest on this podcast.
Yeah.
But these first one-bullet reviews are not from friend of the show, Wildebeest. This first one is from Amazon user DN Merrick. He's got a one-bullet review of The Long Riders. DN Merrick says, I ordered a DVD from Amazon.com, but The Long Riders could have been a better film, with more action, inclusion of nudity at several occasion calls for strict viewing only. My minor younger brother and sister like Western movies too, and they often share the couch whenever I have new Western DVD from Amazon. But with this film, the story is different, and I have to stop the film halfway because of nudity and frontal exposures, which is not suitable for minors. I also feel that the film is rather graphic, quote-unquote, in showing close-ups of someone getting shot in the cheek, chest, and forehead. The film could have been better, and the element of typical cowboyism is missing. Not enough cowboyism in this one.
Gotta have the isms.
As for the film, I am not going to screen it again at home in future. I'd rather watch the old rusty westerns from my VHS collection. This is my personal opinion. I do not mean to harm or hurt anyone's sentiments. See it to judge it. One bullet review from DN Merrick.
What house is this where he's like, hey, little brother and sister, I have a Western movie this that we can all watch together.
Ringed totally as false to me. There are no little brothers and sisters who love to sit on a couch and watch fucking Westerns with their Amazon review writing fucking older brother. You gotta be fucking kidding me. All right, you got those wildebeest pulled up.
Oh, yeah.
We'll look into that. We'll have to make a little like a chart so we know when to look for that if we got a movie coming up on our schedule that that old Will's looked into.
Hey,
get those insights.
Younger brother and sister, I've prepared another Western adventure for us this evening.
Oh, God, that sounds like a terrible house to grow up in.
Just the worst.
Our next one bullet review is from IMDb user Alex Lazarev.
Mm-hmm.
Alex says, bad movie with ugly women. The only thing worse than a bad Western is a bad Western with ugly prostitutes. Anyone who says this movie is any good is either A, being sarcastic, or B, is a fool. You will never get that time back. If you watch this movie, you'll think back to what I wrote and say, he was right. Why didn't I listen? And then you'll feel doubly stupid. Do yourself a favor and give it a pass. Oh, I wasn't kidding about the ugly whores. These chicks are rough. I mean, really, really ugly. I wouldn't have any sort of sexual relations with them if I were paid, never mind the other way around. They're so ugly, I actually thought they cast the ugliest women they could find to show how rough the West was. But I can't bring myself to believe that any casting director would inflict such harm on the populace with intent. Maybe he just has really strange taste in women. Maybe he's short-sighted. Maybe he lost a bet. But believe me when I tell you, these are some scary-looking mofos up in here. I suggest you go and watch Ghostbusters 2 again. That's always a winner. One bullet
what?
Review from Alex Lazarev, who's apparently a big fan of all the titties in Ghostbusters 2. There's some fine-looking women up in that movie.
Oh, these women are nasty. These titties, terrible. I need Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, he probably would have bought a Ripley action figure if they would have made those things back in the 80s. So there we go. That's the one bullet review.
Ghostbusters 2 sucked.
Yeah, Ghostbusters 2 is not a good
movie. Why does it get a pass all the time?
I don't know. There was that autistic kid I went to high school with that loved it, who was in my drama class.
Yeah.
So I did a scene from it with him.
Yeah?
Where I was Viggo the Carpathian, and he was the deranged artist who was painting me, and then I came alive. Yeah, the scourge of Carpathia, the sorrow of Darvia.
Yeah.
So I have a little bit of a soft spot for Ghostbusters 2 because I have that whole monologue memorized.
That's fair. How was he as the artist?
He was pretty rough. It was about a week later that he had a meltdown in the middle of trying to do a monologue from Julius Caesar and stormed out of the class.
Oh.
It was always touch and go with that kid.
Oh. Artist was I can't remember the show with Calista Flockhart.
Oh, yeah, Ally McBeal.
Yeah,
he was an Ally McBeal alum.
Yeah.
Made his bones playing artists in Ghostbusters movies, and then got that cush gig.
Yep.
Those are the one bullet reviews. Too violent, women are too ugly, too much frontal exposures. The five bullet reviews, man.
One of those things is true.
All the five bullet reviews out there, they disappointed me quite a bit.
Oh.
They're all short and boring. They generally just say, like, this is the greatest Western ever. And they all say, this is a movie where real-life brothers play brothers in a movie over and over again. You just wade through hundreds of reviews where people drop this, like, trivia point. Like, they're the only people that know this, and they're blowing your fucking mind with this one.
Mm.
So I pulled a couple of these brother reviews out, just a couple of my favorite ones, just so we can really just hammer it home and let everyone know. This is a movie where real-life brothers are playing real-life brothers.
Hmm.
This first five-bullet review is from Amazon user CJ's Pirate. A movie with brother who plays brothers. That's always a winning situation. Always is all in all caps.
Oh, you got to.
The Long Riders is no exception. This is a great Western for a lazy afternoon or snowed-in day. In this movie, the buyer/viewer gets the Keeches, Carradines, Quaids, and Guests. That's a pretty good hand by any account. Acting is great, as the viewer can tell when the brothers are messing around with their siblings. It shows. There's very little forced about it. Brothers will always be brothers.
Mm.
As a story, well, it's a Western. There's guns, gunplay, horses, and whores. What more could you ask for? Five bullets.
Okay.
This next one doesn't mention whores. It's basically like the only one that doesn't talk about the whores.
Idiot.
This is a five bullet review from Amazon user Twok.
Twat?
Twok says, this is a great movie. Real brothers in a movie that's not even heard of anymore. Five bullets from Twok. Apparently, this modern Hollywood is not putting real brothers in movies, and they'd never have the balls to pull this off.
That's one of his biggest gripes about it, the Fast Fast and Furious franchise. Yeah. They're always talking family, but...
Why did it take until the last one to bring one of Paul Walker's brothers in?
Yeah.
His real brothers should have been throughout the whole movie.
Right, and why hasn't, you know, Van Diesel... Yeah.
Danny Diesel needs to be in there playing the younger brother.
Vin Diesel's brother, Dan Diesel, you know.
Movies suck when they're not real siblings in the cast.
A lot of people say I look like Vin Diesel.
Let's get into your final thoughts and your bullet rating, Matt.
How
would you feel about the Long Riders?
There are indeed brothers in this movie.
That's for damn sure.
There are indeed hooers in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed all the hooers.
Love
scenes.
The hooers.
Violence, check.
Mm-hmm.
Unnecessary horse stunts,
yes.
Double check. That
terribly
scene,
unnecessary.
That scene where the Keach brothers forge the river on a horse, and there's a close up to show you it's really Stacy Keach.
They had to have drowned four horses trying to film that.
That's what Maria said.
Fast moving river.
Yeah, there's no way that they survived that.
They kill horses, don't they?
This movie's insane. It's good at times, mm-hmm. It's great at times, mm-hmm. And then it's also bad at times and clunky at times.
A little bit like the Warriors in that way.
The whole coda with the whole killing of Jesse James, like, yeah, you could have left it at the bank scene gone wrong. I mean...
Definitely an extended denouement.
Like you said,
denouement.
A lot of these Western sprawling epics are 2 hours long because mm-hmm. there's so much shit to mm-hmm. work in. And while we love the shorter films, this one being an hour 40, it was too short.
Yeah, that's probably
true. They tried to do too much, so you got to pick a lane sometimes.
You got to cut some of this shit out and focus on only one heist, or you got to blow it up a little bit more and flesh this shit out a little bit more.
But Keach's aside, I likes what I likes. I love me some Carradines. I'm just a sucker for a Western, and if there's enough... there to keep me entertained, which there was, which is why I'm going to say there was bad stuff, but not enough to deter it from being good enough.
Good enough.
I'm giving it 3 stars.
Three bullets.
Sorry, we do bullets here.
Bullets here on Baby Oil and Blow. I'm echoing your statements. I think the stunt casting with the brothers generally worked out. I like a lot of these guys. The Quaid brothers are great. Carradines are great. The one negative... is that we did get James Keach as Jesse James, and he mm-hmm. was an uncharismatic Jesse James. But if you're doing all brothers, something's not going to work out eventually.
Yeah.
All the action's great. The pacing in this movie is weird as fuck.
Yeah.
Stop and start. I never knew how much time had passed. I don't like that. I think we should have just got, like, one opening scene robbery to establish everybody's characters and the dynamics, and then that big robbery that goes bad in the end.
Yeah.
We didn't need to see them aging over the years. We didn't need to see so much of their family life. I didn't like that shit. But there was enough action to where I never got bored throughout. Solid all the way through, because I'm getting that Walter Hill action, which is what I love, which I'm coming to this Walter Hill month for, to see this Walter Hill action. So, 3 for 3, Walter Hill. I also gave this thing 3 bullets. We're right there.
We feel
all the way through so far.
We feel the same way about Walter Hill films.
This is
apparently
getting crazy. This is getting crazy, my man.
Yeah. It's logical, though. Again, just like I felt like the Warriors was. It's a logical conclusion there.
We're smart men with impeccable taste.
We've figured out movies.
Let's see if we can make it 4 for 4 next week when we dig into maybe Walter Hill's biggest movie, if not The Warriors, I don't know. It's a seminal buddy cop movie, one of the most ripped off movies of all time.
Huh?
We're talking 48 Hours, man. We're getting some Nick Nolte up in this fucking pod.
Oh, yeah. That's the one with Eddie Murphy and Robert De Niro. He's a taxi cab driver. Showtime.
Yep. You watched that.
We're doing Showtime.
I'll watch it, too. We'll talk about it next week.
That's going to be right here on Baby Oil and Blow. Stay single.
It's a long road when you're on your own. And it hurts when they tear your dreams.